I walked in there thinking Jarrett had a good report from seeing him the first time. I expected a pretty good pitching prospect with sort of the usual caveats for a guy of his size and experience level. And it just became clear by like the second inning that it was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. It was just no fooling, top of the rotation stuff with really advanced feel and command and pitchability.
Fly Forever, a baseball perspective fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and joining me this week, filling in for Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, is my colleague from BP, Eric Roseberry. Eric, what's going on, buddy? How was your 4th of July?
It was good. I kind of feel like mom and dad are away this week, and we get the run of the house to ourselves.
You are, by the way, a content machine. I don't know if we've talked about this, but you are the hardest working man in fantasy baseball right now. How much stuff did you write this week?
I did 5 articles, not all fantasy related, since Sunday. And it is Wednesday? Is it Wednesday? It's Wednesday. That's not normal, and it has really cut into my actually watching baseball time, so I'm hoping to balance that out the rest of the week.
And that doesn't even include the On Baseball Writing podcast, which you are the host of. Everybody should go subscribe to that. One of my favorites. So, hey, man, it's great to have you on. We're going to do a cool show today. What we're going to do is we're going to draft second half fantasy storylines, the things that we are watching as they relate to fantasy baseball that we think other fantasy owners should be paying attention to. So the way we're going to do it, we're going to do an effectively wild style draft. Not to rip them off, but I'm going to rip them off here. That's what we do in this podcast. Sorry, Ben and Jeff and Sam, I guess. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping first. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. What did you write this week, Eric, for BP? You have some new stuff up there.
Yeah, on Monday I did a buyer's guide on Michael Taylor of the Nationals, looking at him. And then yesterday I had just a look at Travis Shaw and what his fantasy value is moving forward.
Shaw's a fascinating guy. I can't figure him out. Like, what did you come up with when you dove deeper on him? Because I, for the life of me, can't figure him out. I've talked about this on this show a lot, but I can't figure out Travis Shaw.
Yeah, honestly, that's where I kind of left it was. I mean, there's a lot to like about him. The fact that he's stolen 7 bases is kind of a nice throw-in from a fantasy perspective. But in that park, in that lineup, I kind of like him as a long-term option now.
He's fascinating. I'm very interested. So if you haven't read it, go check out those two pieces. They're up at BP now. I'll have my free agent watch coming out on Friday. I took last week off because why not? It's the 4th of July. So lots of Trevor Cahill content coming your way for Friday. Get excited, people. It's happening. He's back. He looks good, by the way. I like Trevor Cahill a lot. So you can follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Eric is at Eric Roseberry. Make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. So we're going to do the draft coming up. But first, I recorded a segment earlier in the day today. We're recording this right now on Wednesday night. So earlier in the day, I recorded a quick, like, 20-minute conversation with Jeff Paternostro, who is the senior prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus. The BP midseason top 50 list is coming out, so that'll be up while you're listening to this right now. You can go check out the list. It's up at BP, and it is free, so make sure you go check it out. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to have my conversation with Jeff, and then we're going to come back. Eric and I are going to do the draft. So it's going to be a really fun episode. Make sure you stick around. We'll be right back. Coming up right now, Jeff Paternostro. back to Flags Fly Forever. George Bissell here talking with the senior prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus, Jeff Paternostro. The BP Top 50 midseason update is out. It is up at Baseball Prospectus right now. It's like Christmas in July, Jeff. I got to tell you, this is one of the most exciting days of the year for me, and I know for our subscribers as well. So give me a sneak peek here. What's maybe the biggest change on this list from the one that you and the rest of the prospect team put out at the start of the year?
It's Christmas in July. I'm more like Krampus because I'm pretty grumpy about having to do a midseason list.
I don't blame you.
So I tend to err on the side of not shaking things up too much since it's only 3 months of baseball. Things change, and we do have some pretty big jumpers. In some cases, it's because something really has changed. In other cases, it's because our reports this past offseason were thin or old or just incorrect. So, you know, and you have to make the big jumps. You make the big jumps. I don't. It's not as sort of like a starting from scratch model as an offseason list might be. It's sort of because of the nature of it, too, with no draftees and nobody that's in the majors at the time of publication, it can be a bit of a moving target in terms of who's on it and where they're ranked in this whole. I'll be changing all of this again in 2 months. So I try not to make too many big statement jumps. But a lot of times you'll see guys, especially guys that go from short season to full season. And there's I think all our biggest jump guys fit into that category. Like the paucity of short season reports can make it more difficult to rank these guys until you see them in full season. But outside of those type of players, you know, or guys that are healthy or guys that got hurt, I don't really make a ton of big moves.
Right. See, this is a fantasy podcast, and obviously this list is a real-life future value list. It has no relation to fantasy value. That's why you see a guy like Francisco Mejia up so high on this list. Obviously, he's less exciting as a fantasy prospect, despite the way the catching landscape looks. But when I cracked open this list, I think the first name I scanned for, everybody has their one or two guys as prospects. You know, everyone who follows baseball this closely to be listening to this podcast. So the name I went and looked for right away was Sixto Sanchez. And Jarrett Seidler, he's a member of the BP prospect team. You know, you co-host a podcast with him. He wrote a great column about the process, you know, of ranking a guy like Sixto Sanchez. I think he's one of the guys who maybe moved up the most on this latest update. So what can you tell us about Sixto Sanchez? Because it feels like he's about to explode onto the mainstream scene, if he hasn't already.
So Sixto is one of those guys that fits into sort of the short season to full season jump guys, where we just see him more. We had GCL reports that were intriguing, and he was a guy that on various iterations of the off-season list or preseason list was at the back end of the 101 somewhere, and really the difference between, you know, somebody that's 85 on that list and 125 on that list isn't significant from a prospect standpoint. We just cut the list at 101 because that's where we cut it. It's an arbitrary endpoint like anything else. But yeah, so I saw him once this year. I think Jarrett saw him three times. And it became very clearly, like, I walked in there thinking Jarrett had a good report from seeing him the first time. And I expected a pretty good pitching prospect with sort of the usual caveats for a guy of his size and experience level. And it just became clear by, like, the second inning that it was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. It was just no fooling, top-of-the-rotation stuff with really advanced feel and command and pitchability. And despite, you know, being listed at 6 foot, he's not 6 foot. More fastball movement than you'd expect. Not a lot of playing because it's three quarters, but he can cut it. He can run it. He can even sink it a little bit, sort of more down in like a 92 to 95 mile an hour range. He touched 100 for me. He's touched 100 in plenty of starts this year. And the velocity itself is pretty easy because he's an athletic guy with big arm speed and he repeats well. And I mean, it's ace level stuff. The problem, I mean, we didn't rank him like we think he's a future ace only because he's capped pretty hard at 75 pitches. He's had like a phantom DL stint to manage his innings. You just don't know. And this is true nowadays more than even was 5 years ago with really any of these prospects, certainly far more of them than it used to be. If they can handle it, you know, every 5 days, 180 to 200 inning major league workload. and we might not even know that for a couple years, even though his stuff could move him to the majors by that time.
Right. It feels like he's on a similar track to a guy like Francis Martes, who's actually kind of a similar development story, right? Guy who kind of popped up and then really took off, and now he's pitching in a major league rotation. So, like, it wouldn't shock me if he were on a similar track to a guy like that. Is that a fair comp, or am I completely...
Sure, or someone like Julio Urias as well, that kind of sort of precocious... I mean, he has better stuff than Urias does, and but the same kind of, like, precocious...
The feel.
Pitchability. For, yeah. He just knows what he's doing. He's throwing, like, depending on how you want to delineate his various offerings, and I sort of wrote this when I wrote about Sixto earlier this year, you could say he has seven different pitches because it's three fastballs, two changeups, a curve, and a slider. Now, he's going to refine some of those, discard some of those, you know, maybe change the shape or the grip on some of those as he moves up in the minors. I don't know what he's going to exactly look like as a standard four-pitch major league starter, if that's even what he turns into. But the fact that he's able to do that now, I think, speaks very well for future development as well as a pitcher.
Yeah, so I wanted to use Sanchez as a way to tie in sort of the context of young pitching in the game, because you touched on Julio Urias, but he just had shoulder surgery. He's going to be out at least a year. Alex Reyes, who was our number one prospect on the preseason list, he had Tommy John surgery. It feels like... And sort of the young pitchers who have ascended to the major league level, it seems like they've struggled more than usual with that transition in the last couple of years, especially this year, for a variety of reasons that may relate to the ball, but who knows. So where do you stand on the state of pitching? Because it feels to me like when you see a guy like Sanchez as, you know, the second or third pitching prospect ranked in the majors, or on this list, excuse me, you got guys like Brent Honeywell, Mitch Keller, they're kind of in the neighborhood, but... It just doesn't feel like there's a lot of pitching talent in the upper minors right now, does it?
Maybe not in the upper minors. I think as you go down sort of last year's crop of pitching draftees is making a name for themselves on the list. As you'd expect, again, it's sort of like a full first professional season. We get longer looks at guys like A.J. Puck and Riley Pint, who we may have been a little conservative with last year for various reasons.
Yeah.
You know, both delivery and injury related. So I think that's, and those are guys that can move quickly and sort of start to fill in that sort of missing upper minors pitching depth very quickly. You know, someone like Alec Hansen can make it a Double-A before the end of the season. Obviously, Puck's already there. Pint's going to be a little bit more of a level by level guy as a prep arm. But it is difficult. This is sort of a conversation we had internally to rank these pitchers nowadays. So sort of for some of the reasons we discussed when discussing Sixto, it's like any number of these guys could end up a reliever.
Yeah.
And it feels like that was always the case for sort of your back end or second half of the top 50, you know, mid-rotation starter types with command and change-up questions that might just end up really good two-pitch relievers. You know, Dellin Betances was a guy like that, J.R.'s Familia, another one, the kind of guys that you're like, they're starters in the minors. It's mid-rotation stuff if it all comes together, but maybe you just let them loose for 20 pitches at a time and you have a good late-inning arm.
Right.
And those guys have always existed at the back end of the list. I feel like now it's just – it's not that these guys don't have starter stuff. You know, someone like Walker Buehler, for example, who he ranked very, very highly.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have the best stuff in baseball or in minor league baseball right now. But there's just other – we don't really get to see them. He's another guy that's on a hard pitch count because he's coming off Tommy John surgery, and the Dodgers tend to be more conservative with these guys in general, maybe compared to sort of the median baseball player development system. But we're just not getting, and I'm not, you know, advocating throwing these guys 100, 110 pitches a start, 180 innings a season in the minors, but we don't, the way we build pitching prospects workloads right now, A, doesn't give us, I think, insight into what they're going to be like as major league starters, and B, hasn't been particularly successful in cutting injury rates.
Right, that's the other part. Yeah,
we don't know why these guys blow out, so it's very difficult to look at a guy's mechanics and say he's an injury risk.
at the end of the day, it's just very difficult, like you said, to rank some of these guys. Like you mentioned the guy who I was going to bring up, Walker Buehler. It's like we have no idea what type of role they envision for him and how he ultimately makes it to the major leagues and health-wise what's going to happen.
He's been healthy for 10 months, essentially.
Right. I just, like, what do you do with
a guy like that? He's been very, very good in those 10 months. Yeah. But
it's hard.
And he's a guy, too, that was a college pitcher. It was, like, not projected to be a flame-throwing power righty. He was like a classic sort of Vanderbilt polished mid-rotation guy.
Yeah.
With like a good fastball, but like he's touching 99 regularly. And yeah, it's, he's not – it's 75 pitch, 90 pitch, 5-6 inning stints, but that's better than – the stuff's there, 6 innings into a start, which is saying something.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about the BP Top 50 Midseason Update with Jeff Paternostro, BP's senior prospect writer. He's the guy with all the info, in case you're wondering. He's the person I turn to when I need information for a dynasty league. So at the top of this list, you have the obvious names. You have your Moncadas, Ahmed Rosario, Victor Robles is there, Rafael Devers, guys you'd expect to be there. Gleyber Torres is still there despite the injury. But the name I want to ask you about is Brendan Rodgers. We bumped him up. He's up in the top 10, I believe, in the final update here. He was just promoted to AA, where he's kind of struggled, but it's 10 games. He then got hurt. But his numbers, even for high A, I mean, he's out in Lancaster. But even for Lancaster, these numbers are kind of insane. He batted 400 with 36 extra base hits in 48 games. That's just over 200 at-bats. The numbers are wild, but he's another guy who's kind of divisive. So how difficult is it to rank a guy like him, and what are you looking for from a performance standpoint from Rodgers the rest of the way? What are some of the things you're watching in his profile?
I mean, it's easy when I have, like, Wilson Kerman in my ear telling me to push Rodgers higher and higher up the list.
Yeah, he does that.
And I saw him last week in Hartford, sort of my first look at him. And it was one of those looks where it's like, not a bad look. It's not a good look. It's not really a representative look. He doesn't do anything. He like took a 3-for-4 where none of the balls were hit particularly hard. I mean, the stuff I came away with from Rodgers is there's good barrel control there. He's a much better shortstop than I expected. I don't think he's a great one, but he's sure-handed, his instincts are good, the arm's strong, he'll stick. Like, he's one of those guys where I'm pretty confident he'll stick, even if he's not a gold glove-level shortstop, which makes the potential, plus hit, plus power profile there really stand out more. So I think part of the reason he got bumped up is graduations. Part of the reason is he posted an 1100 OPS in high A with commensurate looks from our California League guys that backed up the performance, sort of from like a tool scouting standpoint, and the fact that we're just more confident he sticks at shortstop.
There are two guys on this list that I think every fantasy owner is interested in long term. I mean, we could do a half hour on Juan Soto, but I think people kind of understand what to expect there. He's a guy who shot up the list here, but Ronald Acuna and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think if you asked most fantasy owners who they take, most of them would take Guerrero, but it's actually probably Acuna who's the more attractive guy. Would you agree with that? Because I know we have Acuna ranked higher, and the reports on him coming out of Double A, where he's 19 in Double A and he's slashing yes. 321 370 500 in 51 games. That's who does that?
Ronald Acuna. Yeah. I would say even they're close enough ranked on this list that I don't think there's a huge difference between them at the end of the day. And again, it's a list that's a little more in flux than our offseason lists. I mean, Acuna, very well, we could see Vladimir Guerrero next year at 19 mashing in Double A. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys that has the pure hitting ability. And I think I came on this show in the offseason and said, we kept Vladimir Guerrero off the list because I don't know the reports to support him as sort of a top 101 prospect if he moves to first base, which we think he'll move to first base. I mean, I didn't say this on this podcast. I said it on pretty much every other podcast I did in the offseason in regards to the 101. And, yeah. This goes to the things, where we just didn't have the reports on the ground in the Appy League to support it. Guess what? It became very clear very quickly that we are – I even said I think we might be a year late on him. Well, we're going to be 5 months late on him instead of a full year because I tried to sort of make amends here. I actually had a conversation with a scout recently who took me to task for not having Guerrero on it. On our 101, and I asked, well, he's a first baseman. long term, isn't he? He's like, yeah, I don't give a shit.
That's awesome. Scouts, they don't hold back, huh?
Yeah, okay. he might have the most offensive upside just as a pure hitter of any prospect in baseball. Now, he is probably a first baseman in the end, so he's going to have to hit. And we have him. I got pushed back from the industry internally to have him even higher than we ended up having him.
Wow.
But I'm still, again, this is the kind of thing where I'm not going to make, I mean, I already moved him like 100 spots about roughly where he would have been preseason.
Yeah.
But I'm going to wait for, you know, another half season in the Midwest League, maybe a cup of coffee in Dunedin at the end of the year and sort of reevaluate in the offseason. I think I would take Acuna over just because he's closer. I think he's a little more of a well-rounded fantasy prospect, at least.
And he can steal bases, too.
I mean, he might fill out and the speed might tamp down a little bit. But, yeah, Vladimir Guerrero is going to be sort of your classic base clogger, as it were, in all likelihood. Although he's a better athlete than you'd think, given the size. He's also only 18, so you would hope he can carry the weight pretty well at 18.
Let me ask you about Bo Bichette, because he seems to be the hot name in the industry. Everybody wants to know about him. So what have you heard on him? Because I know we ranked him pretty aggressively for a guy who I believe didn't make the 101 at the start of the year.
He did not. He was at the back end of the Blue Jays top 10 list.
Yeah.
You know, I think he might have been behind, like, Max Pentecost or something, which doesn't look great.
He's a guy.
But that's another case where it's a guy that, we didn't have reports. He was a draftee with, you know, you started to get towards the end of 2016, the sort of the scenario where the people that really like Bo Bichette. But there was enough questions sort of about whether he'd be able to hit upper level pitching. I think those questions still exist. He's probably not a shortstop. He's probably going to be a second baseman in the long term. But yeah, again, it's a guy where the offensive upside is so big that you just have to rank him accordingly. And we put a pretty aggressive ranking on him, I guess. Again, you have to keep in mind guys that are in the majors may not actually graduate before the offseason. We don't have the draftees on here. So depending on where guys are ranked in the list, they can be anywhere from, you know, 5 to 15 spots lower on our offseason list, even if everybody holds serve. But if he's like a pretty good chance to be a roll six up the middle player, there just aren't that many of those. And there might even be a little more upside in there if the power continues to play at higher levels.
Yeah. So last question for me here. We'll kind of wrap things up on this. But which prospect in the last couple of months has changed your opinion the most? Maybe we've already talked about them, but it can be either a guy who's changed your opinion in a positive way or a negative way. Which one of the prospects, when you look at this list, stands out to you that you've changed your mind the most on in the last few months that we've been covering them?
I'll give you one of each.
Okay. Cool.
For on the good side, Francisco Mejia. Now, Francisco Mejia is a good prospect. We ranked him, I think he was our highest ranked catcher as a prospect coming into the season. You kind of know what you're getting there. He had the big hit streak last year that got everyone's attention. We started to get positive reports on his defense and how he was working with the pitchers in comparison to past years. And, you know, he was a catching convert as a professional. So these things can take time. Catchers are weird generally. And the sort of the process of learning how to handle a pitching staff, you know, field manage the staff and everything else takes time.
Yeah, the aging curves are always weird with catchers.
But all that aside, and we're pretty confident he's going to stick at catcher now. I know there have been some questions about that over the years. The thing that stood out for me, and it's one of those things where I had good reports on him, but I hadn't actually seen him in a while. And then I saw him this year for Akron, just like, oh, this guy just barrels everything. And like against a pretty good New Hampshire pitching staff, there's some, I think it was against like Sean Reed Foley and who's the other guy? John Harris, who were both top 10 prospects. In the Jays system, Reed Foley was a back end 101 guy, and they have major league quality stuff. And he just everything barreled. Like you can just tell it's a short swing. He's short to the ball. He can really track breaking balls and like do damage to them if they stay even in the vicinity of the zone. He hit one ball from the right side against a lefty throw in like 95. He had no idea where it was going, but it's still, you know, major league velocity from the left side. You put it like on the roof of the bar and grill on the right center field stand or left center field stands. You're just like, oh, that's, and he's like, he's a small guy. He's compact. He's short to the ball. And I'm just sitting there thinking like, if we think he's a catcher and I can, aggressively, but not ridiculously put 7 hit, 5 power on him. Like,
that's good.
That's good. That's an elite prospect.
Yeah.
You always wonder how they're going to adjust to the majors, because it's not even on a tools level. I think the tools will be fine adjusting to the majors, but there is added responsibility that comes with managing a major league pitching staff and, you know, learning about major league hitters, and just, it's more like sort of mental energy that has to get spent in those realms versus just see ball, hit ball, as you might be for other position player prospects.
Right.
But yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, I saw what I saw, and that's that dude looks like a monster. I'm going to rank him accordingly. I mean, awesome. If I thought for sure he was a slam dunk everyday catcher that could hold up to 120 games behind the plate every year, I would have been sorely, sorely motivated to put him number one overall.
That's fascinating. So who is the guy on the negative end of the spectrum?
So I guess in the other direction, there's a couple, like, I don't like to kill guys.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Off, you know, 3 months of data, because anything can happen. So this isn't really a performance kill. It's the guy hasn't pitched because he's been hurt, and that's Anderson Espinosa. And this is the downside of ranking Sixto Sanchez highly, like we ranked Anderson Espinosa in the offseason, who's another smallish framed righty with really nice stuff, is that when they break down, you do start to wonder if it's, you know, guys just break down, whether they're built like Anderson Espinosa or they're built like AJ Puck. But you do wonder if, even on a minor league workload, if you can't handle sort of the day in and day out grind with that body type without breaking down, you know, what does that really portend for the future? Are these guys just destined for the bullpen regardless, no matter how athletic they are and, you know, how well they're able to repeat their delivery or hold their stuff into games? So at the end of the day, we don't know if this is a long-term thing, but if you can't take the ball, it's very hard for me to keep you on a list, at least in the medium term.
Yeah, see, here's my favorite thing about talking to you, Jeff. We've been talking for nearly a half hour, and we didn't even get to Eloy Jimenez literally breaking light towers. Like, that's what's so fun about prospects, is that
light tower power has.
Yeah, literally.
I mean, he's got it. He might have the most, in terms of like real, actual baseball prospects, he might have amongst the most raw power in the minors right now, and he's 20 and not really done filling out yet, so.
He's still kind of figuring it out. Like, that's the scary part. He's still getting better. Eloy Jimenez, invest. He's going to be pretty good. So, Jeff, once again, thank you so much for taking the time. The BP Top 50 midseason list is up right now at Baseball Prospectus. I believe it's free. Is it free?
It is free.
Perfect. So, go there
you can,
now.
You can check it out and yell at me in chat or on Twitter, as people are wont to do.
That's right. You're chatting. What time? At 1 o'clock Eastern, I believe?
Noon.
At noon. Okay, so this podcast will be up before then. So if you're listening, Jeff is chatting. If it's before noon, make sure you get your questions and you can talk with him on BP. So, Jeff, hey, once again, I love talking with you, man. This is a lot of fun. So thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, George.
So there you have it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back with Eric Roseberry. We're going to draft second half fantasy storyline. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on Flags Fly Forever. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever. George Bissell, Eric Roseberry, BP. Which prospect are you paying most attention to? We just had that talk with Jeff there, but which of the prospects are you the most fascinated by this year that you've been watching?
I mean, as a Reds fan, it's easy to say I'm most interested in what Nick Senzel's doing, because hopefully in the next 2 years he's going to be up. I know who it is, and this is for fantasy purposes. In a couple of leagues, I've had Ahmed Rosario sitting on my bench for about a month and a half now, and so I have paid special attention to him and my frustration with the Mets front office, especially in an NL-only league, and so I have a certain affection for him after this season.
Yeah, he's a guy we've talked about a lot on this show just because obviously Brett and Mike are Mets fans, but the way the Mets have handled that situation is a little bit curious. I don't think the reasons for keeping him down make a lot of sense. Like, I've heard the quote from Sandy Alderson where he said, you know, he doesn't want him to be viewed as a potential savior, and it's like, but what if he is? you don't know that. So just ask, you know, the Yankees or the Dodgers, who've, you know, had a lot of success with guys they've promoted. So whatever, the Mets are the Mets. I'm done trying to figure them out. Let's do the draft here. So let me lay down some ground rules before we do this. Like they would say in Anchorman, before we do this, let's lay down some ground rules. We're gonna each go. I'm gonna let you go first. I'm gonna let you have the first pick, Eric, since you're the guest on this show. You're gonna have the first pick. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna pick topics, basically in the order that we find them fascinating, storylines that fantasy owners need to be paying attention to, for the second half. So you, my friend, you're up first. The board is yours. Pick away.
I'll pick an easy one first because I think there's gonna be a lot of people interested in this. We don't need to spend a ton of time talking about how good Mike Trout is at baseball. But coming back from a thumb injury, I guess for fantasy purposes, what kind of second half do you see him having?
Oh boy, that's a fascinating question, because Mike Trout prior to the injury was basically on pace to do something we haven't seen in a long, long time. Like, he basically was having a Mike Trout year, but better than what Mike Trout usually does. Because I want to pull up his numbers here, because he racked up, just from like a wins above replacement standpoint, like I know that doesn't have a lot to do with fantasy, but in 47 games, he was already at like 3.5 war. So he was basically on pace for like a 12-win season, which is like Barry Bonds level production. What's been most interesting to me about Trout is that he's running more. And he's been a lot more efficient, it feels like. 10 steals, he was only caught one time. Batting .337. You know, the last couple of years, I know last year he batted .315, but he'd been under .300 for two straight years. So you're looking at a guy where if he can sustain like a .330 batting average with like a .450, .460 on base, hit for power, steal bases, that's crazy. Like, you're talking best player in the league by a long, long stretch here. So I'm fascinated by what Mike Trout's going to do. I think he's going to come back and look exactly the same. But what he was doing before the injury, I mean, we're talking about a potential career year, right?
Well, the reason I'm so interested, I know how much people love hearing about other people's fantasy teams, but I actually dealt him a few weeks ago.
Oh.
Thinking this was going to be a longer issue. And now I'm terrified.
Oh my goodness, I'm
I don't
want to
tell
you
who I got back.
Please don't. All right, we're not doing this. I'm not listening to bat signals about Mike Trout and comments on this podcast. So please no. What is that? The Ockrent's rule, where the only thing less interesting than your fantasy team is someone else's fantasy team. Is that the rule of thumb?
That sounds about right.
I'm gonna stay out
of my
personal.
Why we do this for a living. So
yeah, all right, so you went with Mike Trout. That's obviously a good selection. My first topic is going to be the home run surge, and I think we've had this discussion a lot, and I'll tie it back into fantasy here in a second, but I think this is maybe the one issue that changes the game profoundly. We haven't experienced anything like this. Run scoring in the second half of 2015 took off. And then last year, obviously, there was an even more increased surge in terms of home runs and run production on the whole. But things have just gone to a whole nother level this year. I mean, you've read the pieces, obviously. You know, like Rob Arthur, Mitchell Lichtman, Ben Lindbergh, you know, they've all done a really great job covering this piece. All of whom Bob Nightingale just inexplicably forgot to mention when he wrote a piece for USA Today about it. So there's my shot at Bob. But no, I think where this matters is we need to change our benchmarks. This is sort of like a long-standing Ron Chandler sort of theory, and this is something he's written about with the Baseball HQ publications, and he talks about a lot, is that, you know, we need to adjust what our benchmarks are for power, because I think a lot of us use sort of like 20 home runs as a benchmark. Like, wow, 20 home runs, that sounds impressive. And it's really not going to be anymore. When almost every player is going to get to 10 to 15, like you have guys like Daniel Descalzo who are at like 8 home runs this year. Like, if those guys are going to hit 15, it doesn't matter so much that a guy hits 20 to 25. So I think that's my broader point on it, is I think we're going to have to figure out what new benchmarks are for power and how it really impacts players' fantasy value. Like, Joey Gallo is the best example of this, right? He's a guy who's going to hit for a ton of power, but because of the deficiencies in his batting average and some of the other things, it doesn't really matter if he hits 30 home runs. You know what I mean? He's still going to be a sub-replacement level player. So that's my big thing on the home run surge, is I think we all need to reassess our benchmarks. And this is a trend that I don't think is going to suddenly reverse, which was something we thought coming into the year. So I'd be interested in where you stand on how you're baking in this new home run environment into how you analyze players, Eric.
Yeah, I agree, where I think what it's done is it's not made them irrelevant, but especially the guys who are big home run guys who might drain your batting average or might really hurt you in some other categories. It's definitely made them a lot less attractive. And so, you know, in leagues where before, just kind of flipping through the home run leader list, you know, Joey Gallo hitting 191, Napoli's a guy who's got a low batting average with a bunch of home runs.
He also looks like you.
he does a little bit. So, even somebody like, you know, Hunter Renfro, 16 home runs already, but hitting .233, just you don't have to settle for, I think, as much. I'm going to pick this guy up just for the home runs, knowing he's going to hurt me so much in other areas.
Are you ready for my mea culpa here?
Do it.
I'm going to admit I was wrong, something I do quite a lot. I owe maybe you, and I owe the Cincinnati Reds an apology because...
Oh, here we go.
I was wrong on Adam Duvall. I'm ready to admit it. I was wrong.
This is the highlight of my baseball season.
Yeah, I know. Soak it in. Everyone gets their day in the sun. And this is yours. I was wrong. Okay? Adam Duvall, a year ago, he had a brutal second half to close out 2016. In 600 plate appearances, he batted .240 with a sub-300 on base. 33 home runs. That's great. 100 RBI. But this year, okay, obviously he's hit 19 home runs already, which is great. But he's batting .280. I didn't think he could get there. And it's not like he's having a crazy BABIP year either. His BABIP's .318, which is high for him and for a guy who still hits a ton of fly balls. But it's not crazy. It's not .340. It's fine. I was wrong about Adam Duvall. If he can hit for batting average and hit for the level of power he's hitting at, you're looking at a guy who's more like a Justin Upton with less speed. I mean, he can run. He's stolen five bases. So, I mean, the difference between him and Justin Upton, I don't think there maybe is one now, and that's not something I would have thought a few months ago. So I was wrong on Adam Duvall. I apologize. I was wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say even the stolen bases has been the big thing to me, where it's been good to see him, you know, continue to produce. But, I mean, there's the fact he could hit, you know, low double-digit stolen bases this season, which, yeah, would just really put together a nice season if he can, you know, not have the same second-half struggles he did a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of the coin is he's still striking out a ton. He's 29 years old. This is not a profile that tends to, like, age gracefully. Like, when it goes, it's going to go fast. So I still would be nervous long term if I were in a dynasty league, but
sure.
Adam Duvall has proved me wrong, and kudos to him. I mean, fantastic. All right, second round, second pick. You're up, Eric.
Yeah, so I just did a quick glance at the ESPN player rater and pulled some top 50 names of guys you probably wouldn't expect to be there right now, and just kind of wanted to see what we think of their second half coming forward.
All right. Hit me with it.
We already hit Travis Shaw, so we don't need to spend time there. Surprisingly, Greg Holland has been a top 50.
Oh boy,
fantasy player. Would you expect that to continue?
I know he's kind of cooled off a little bit. There was one point early in the year where I think he like hadn't allowed a base runner or something stupid. Greg Holland has kind of always been good. I mean, that was we talked about him on a recent show, and I think Brett had some pretty. I don't think it's a strong take, but Greg Holland's pretty much a top five relief pitcher at this point. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's got 27 saves already. He's probably going to end up around 40. The Rockies are a competitive team. What he does well, I mean, he's either striking you out or he's walking you. He's not giving up. Basically, it's a great recipe for Coors, right? I mean, you're not making any contact. So he's either going to strike you out or he's going to put you on base. He's not going to let you put a ball in play. So that's maybe the most encouraging part. I wouldn't expect like a sub-2 ERA going forward. I think he finishes around, you know, like 2.5, maybe a little closer to 3. But this is a guy who was a dominant reliever and has come back and looked really good. So no doubts about Greg Holland for me.
The maybe the most surprising name in the top 50, and this shocked me, was Jim Johnson is on the top 50 of the ESPN player rater.
What? I'm pulling up the numbers. What?
Well, to the
point, okay, saves are saves, but I mean his numbers are
a big chunk of this is bad. He has 6 wins.
Okay, yeah, like Jason Vargas has, you know, he was going to be one of my guys, but he's like 9-0 or something like that, 10-0. So that's going to drive player rater finish a lot. I mean, that's what wins will do. So, right.
But I mean, he interestingly, his FIP is 2.42 compared to a 3.68 ERA. So Jim Johnson bumped his strikeouts up a couple strikeouts per 9. He's putting together a nice little season for Atlanta.
I mean, if he gets traded, I think that's interesting. Like if he ends up in like Washington, I think that makes him a little more interesting. So yeah, maybe that's a good name to file away. Like if you're going to try and trade for a closer in the next couple of weeks before the actual major league trading deadline, he's probably a good pick. That's a good call.
Three other names I had that we probably didn't expect to be there, but I know you guys have hit a couple of these already. Anybody strike your fancy in terms of Vargas, Elvis Andrews, or Justin Smoke?
I feel like I've it's a very hipster way to go about this, but like I feel like I was kind of in on Smoke at the start, and now he's hit so much that I'm kind of out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
He's reached a level that I don't know if that's where he's at. He's basically like Ben Miguel Cabrera this year. Like, it's kind of nuts. The other guys, Jason Vargas, I mean, the thing I always go back to, I liked him at the start of the year. You and I both wrote about him in April. Mm-hmm. When he came back, because he was actually striking out a ton of guys. And that dried up. You know, that was a mirage. But he still has a great changeup. He can locate all his pitches. He changes eye levels. He changes locations very well. It's hard to square him up. There's a lot of soft contact there. So what he's doing, I mean, with that ballpark behind him in Kansas City and the Royals defense, it's sustainable. He's not going to finish with like a 5 ERA. But he is susceptible against right-hand hitters. Good right-handed lineups, I think, you're going to have to pick your spots a little bit. But right now, he's a must-start guy, and this is real. I mean, the guy knows how to pitch, and I think he's motivated. What I'd be worried about is if he gets traded to another situation. Let's say he got traded to, like, the Dodgers, for example, okay? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he gets traded to LA and it's not as good of a defense behind him and he has to face some pretty tough lineups that are right-hand heavy in hitters parks, that I'd be a little concerned about. You know what I mean? And switching, you know, situations after the last couple of years in Kansas City, then I'd be a little more worried about him. You know what I mean? But for right now, if he stays in KC, he's great. I love him.
One more name. How about a guy just outside the top 50? Ender Inciarte checking in at 52. Flipping through his numbers, he's already got 11 steals, which I think has been a big boost, hitting .306. So he can do some things for you. Maybe other players can't, who you probably took way earlier than him.
Right. I mean, if the issue, though, is if you're ranking him going forward in the outfield, can you put him in the top 20 to 30 outfielders?
It would be tough too.
With Freeman back, I mean, that's going to help his runs. But man, I have a hard time doing it. He doesn't, he's not, he's not enough of a standout in one category. This was kind of the argument against Jose Ramirez, right, in the offseason. It's like, well, he doesn't have that one real standout category. So that'd be my concern. If he slips a little in one or two areas, he's not doing enough in the others to make up for that. That'd be my big concern with NCR Day. He's having a great year, but I'm not sure where I haven't done a reshuffle of the outfield rankings yet, so I don't know where I'd put him, but I don't think I'd be able to push him in my top 20. Not with guys like, you know, Duvall and Marcelo Zuna and Corey Dickerson. I mean, the outfield is kind of stacked right now when you look at the top ends of those tiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are, in terms of draft topics, those are, I think, the big second half someone will be paying attention to.
Those are some good calls. All right, my next one is going to be, let me pull up my list here, because we were talking about a lot of players and I got distracted there. Okay, my next topic is going to be the pitching landscape as it relates to, you basically have, I mean, you have the player radar out in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
There are basically three guys right now who are head and shoulders above the rest of the landscape. You have Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw. There's like this fun sort of meta debate going on within the industry right now where it's like, well, if you had to win one game, who would you pick? It's like, who gives a shit? They're all really good. I'd pick any one of them. Like, I don't swear too often, but I think that's a stupid debate. It's like the Mount Rushmore debate, all right? Like, I'm going to be honest. I can't stand those debates. They're kind of idiotic. Like, Chris Sale is going to strike out 300 guys. Max Scherzer is a freaking machine. And then everyone wants to knock Clayton Kershaw after he gives up 6 home runs against the Mets and, oh, he's got a home run problem. Then he goes 3 straight starts where he posts pretty much a shutout and he no-hits the Diamondbacks in the 7th inning, you know, last night. So Clayton Kershaw is still Clayton Kershaw. And the issue, though, is that those guys are so far ahead of everyone else. Like, name me another pitcher that you'd put in that class. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Is anyone even close to those three guys who are all legitimate first-round picks with the way the pitching landscape looks right now? I mean, although maybe that's my point, is at the end of the year, are these guys all first-round picks? And the gap between them and the rest of the starting pitching pool is just so wide.
It feels like it. I mean, if you're talking about going into next season, in my mind, those three are in a class by themselves when you're talking about draft position or bid values.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to think of who could get into that conversation. You know, like Jacob DeGrom, if he's right, I think is close. I mean, you still have Bumgarner and Syndergaard who are injured.
Could Kluber get there?
I mean, if you're looking at 2018 value,
yeah,
he's going to be 32, I guess so. Yeah. You'd have to put Kluber there now. I don't think
anyone... Are you ready to make the hot take Alex Wood in that category?
Don't do this to me, Eric. Don't do this. You know I'm going to say yes, and then he's going to, like, blow out his shoulder.
Oh, it's...
I don't... Here's the thing, okay? It's fun to get attached to players, but it reaches a certain point where you need to step back and go, okay, I need to slow down here, because Alex Wood's been great. I think he's 9-0. He's pitching tonight later on. We're recording this, you know, at like 9 o'clock East Coast. So he's going to pitch in about an hour. I don't know what's going to happen, but he's been fantastic. He's got a sub-2 ERA. I was shocked he didn't make the All-Star team, personally. He's been that good this year. But, man, Alex Wood's going to be that guy who no one's going to rank aggressively because of the injury history, and, you know, it was 1 year. But I think sharps are going to be very aggressive on paying for him next year. If he continues to pitch like this, you're not going to get him cheap. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like James Paxton. You weren't getting him cheap this year. It just wasn't happening. So that'd be my big topic, would be the pitching landscape. I just think it's changed really dramatically. And like, it goes back to benchmarks, right? You need to pay attention to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So with that changing landscape, do you feel like, as you're thinking about next season, are you investing a little more heavily in one of the top end guys?
I found myself doing it more this year than I would have in years past. You know, if I'm making a title run, you and I, we both play in a lot of dynasty leagues, right? And
yeah.
I think a lot of people who listen to this show, they play dynasty as well. I mean, we all play in redrafts, but if you're in a dynasty league and your contention cycle says you're going for it, I'm more likely to trade for a pitcher this year than I would be for a hitter. You know, I've gone out and I've dealt for, you know, John Lester and Clayton Kershaw, and I picked up, you know, Yu Darvish in trades in a bunch of places. And, you know, those are the types of moves I'm looking to make. And I just think you can't win without one of those guys, because the volatility and injury question marks. Like, if you built a rotation around Lance McCullers, you're just not going to get enough innings this year, right? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you don't invest in one of those big name guys, like, there were only 14 pitchers a year ago who threw 200 innings. We might have even fewer than that this year. But so if you don't have a guy who's giving you volume and then quality innings, you are really behind the eight ball. Like, you have to nail it streaming. Like, you can't have any blow-ups, basically.
You're just
so far behind if you don't have one of those guys. So that would be my take on that.
Yeah.
All right, what's your next pick? So this is the fourth round now, I think? Third round pick. We'll do five rounds.
I am curious. What are you doing with AJ Pollock moving forward? I was watching Dodgers Diamondbacks last night, saw him. This is the second season now. He hasn't lost as much injury time this season as he did last year. But where there's been some durability concerns, he had already stolen 11 bases in 38 games. So he was well on his way there, but the home runs were down this season. You know, maybe the rest of the season or even into next season, how are you evaluating Pollock moving forward?
You know, what's actually funny about AJ Pollock, he was the first fantasy baseball article I wrote for the Dynasty Guru. Yeah, he was literally the first. This is why I always think fondly of him. Back in the 2015 offseason, so this was right after 2014 when he got hurt. You know, he played 75 games. Had 7 home runs and 14 steals, batted .302, and he got hurt. He broke his hand. He got hit by a pitch. And I wrote a column, and I remember the name of it even. That's how funny this is. It was like, can AJ Pollock be a big fish or something like that? And basically he did that. He doubled what he had done in that small sample, you know, in 2015. We hit 20 home runs, stole 40 bases, and hit .315. So I don't think you're ever getting that back. I just think the injuries – they have to take a toll a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, when you have this many and you miss that much time, I don't know if you can ever get back to that level. I think we're kind of seeing that with Michael Brantley, right? Michael Brantley's still a great player, but I don't think we're ever getting back MVP Michael Brantley, that version of him. So Pollock, you watched the at-bats last night, right? He's a pain mm-hmm. in the ass.
Yeah,
I'm swearing a lot in this show right now. I apologize, but no, he really is. Like, he takes a lot of pitches. He'll foul off pitches. He'll wait for something he can drive. And, you know, what impresses me is that he hadn't faced major league pitching in what, a few weeks at least. Certainly no one who could throw like Clayton Kershaw, and he was putting forth good at bats. Like, he's spitting on Clayton Kershaw curveballs. The guy's really, really talented. So if you have any opportunity to buy him, like, absolutely do it. I think rest of the season, he's a top 30 outfielder, you know, going forward. I'd be confident paying that type of value to go get him if I didn't own him already.
So you're confident he's playing the rest of the season?
Well,
things are good.
Right. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with the injuries. But when it's just like a Rich Hill situation, right? Like, when he's on the field, I'm pretty sure what he's going to give you is going to be, you know, really elite, but you're never going to know what's going to happen with the injuries. That goes back to my point, right? Like, I think at some point all this takes a toll on him, and I'd be really careful long term, but the guy can play. He's good.
Yeah, I would say the one concern I have with him is, and again, this is an incredibly small sample, but his fly ball rate's down to about 32%, which is actually fairly well in line with every season other than 2016 last year. The home run to fly ball rate's down. And so, again, there's going to be power everywhere, so you don't need to worry. But it would make me a little skittish maybe about some of those power numbers going forward.
Right. Like, this is my point on Francisco Lindor. Like, I don't – the power is gravy. I want the batting average and I want the steals. You know, that's what I care more about. And if he can't do that, then I'd be concerned. But I think Pollock's going to give you the average and the steals, and that's what you're paying for. There's, like you said, you can get the power somewhere else. All right, so was Pollock your pick for the third round?
He was.
Okay. I'm going to take a single player, too, here. How about that?
Do it.
I want your take on this. Justin Turner.
Mm.
Nobody talks about him except me. I love him. No, a lot of us love Justin Turner, but he didn't make the All-Star team. So what does he do last night? He goes out and hits a home run. He hits a ball off the top of the wall. He's batting .384, and this isn't like, oh, he's played 50 games. Or, you know, he has like 50 plate appearances. He is 250. So I don't think he's going to get to 600 because of all the injuries. I think he's going to be around, like, what, 500, 550, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really damn good. He's an incredible hitter. I don't know how to explain it in any other terms, but I mean, Justin Turner, where do you like value him? Because I'm trying to pull up the Brett's list for the Dynasty Guru 500 going forward, but like, ballpark it for me. Like, where would you rank Justin Turner, and what do you think of what he's done this year? Because he's been fantastic for me. I love him.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing that jumps out about Turner is his plate discipline has been kind of incredible this season. I mean, career, he had a 15% strikeout rate. He's cut that to 9.8 over the season. He's walking, you know, over 10% of the time this year. So while the average obviously isn't going to stay up at 384, the fact that he's making so much more contact definitely makes me confident that average is going to come up and probably hover around. If he moving forward, I'd be confident in him as a 300 hitter. Obviously, he's going to hit better than that the rest of this season. So, I mean, once you get past kind of those upper tier Arenado, Bryant, Donaldson guys, I think he's got to be right under them, kind of in that next category.
Yeah, that's the thing that stands out to me with Turner is, like you mentioned, he doesn't strike out for a power hitter. And the other thing is it's almost impossible to defend against him, right? You can't shift him. Because he hits line drives everywhere, and he hits fly balls to all different parts of the park. So it's not like you can play him to hit to the opposite field or play him to pull. He's going to beat you all over the field, which is unbelievable. So Brett has him ranked as the number 82 hitter. No, not hitter. 82nd overall in his Dynasty Guru 500 update, which is up 14 spots from the preseason. But I'd put him in my top 50. Like, what's the difference between him and Daniel Murphy, really, at this point? Other than maybe the health is a concern.
Yeah. Does the age worry you at all going forward? He'll be 33 by next season.
Yeah, that's part of it. He got hurt. I think the Dodgers are going to be very careful about using him back-to-back days, especially on travel. He said it, too. Like, I'm getting up there. So, yeah, I think that's maybe a real concern is that he runs out of gas in the years, but we've seen older guys be productive in years past, especially if they, you know, if you can keep them off their feet a little bit. Like Victor Martinez was still cranking out incredible years at 37, 38. Adrian Beltre is still going. So I think if the Dodgers can find the right way to, what is it called? Like monitor his miles, you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to push him too hard. If they can figure out a way that works for them and him and to keep him on the field for 150 games, that's fine. I'll pay for that. That's great. So, I don't know. I love Justin Turner. I just want an excuse to talk about him because I feel like nobody talks about him. The dude's hitting, like, 400, and no one seems to bring him up because he's only got 8 home runs, which, I you know, great, but he could have a lot more if he wanted to.
yeah.
All right, so your fourth round pick.
My fourth round pick is, which player do you think fantasy wise is most going to benefit from a second half trade?
Oh, I love this question already.
I'll throw a couple out there. So
we did Vargas a little.
Yeah. MLB Trade Rumors actually came out with their top 60 trade deadline candidates today.
60?
60.
That's a lot of names. That's
a lot of looking at a couple of these in the top five, there are a few pitchers here.
I can't get a grocery list together.
Well, that's a lot of groceries. But two relievers in particular, Addison Reed or David Robertson, either of them.
Jeez. Robertson's got to end up in Washington, right? I mean,
somebody does, yeah.
You literally have people putting Bryce Harper's reactions to home runs to the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme. Okay? You can't live in a world where that's happening. That cannot happen to you if you're the Nationals. That can't be going forward what happens to you. It just can't. They have to do this. You sell everyone short of Robles, right?
Yeah.
You say he's off limits, but I will trade you anyone else. If you want Carter Kieboom, go for it. Be my Eric Fetty, done. Like, get it done, Washington. It's an embarrassment. It literally has gotten to that point.
Yeah, I'm shocked they haven't done it yet. So
I mean, closers are close. Like, I personally punt saves a lot. I don't care much about closers. For me, I'll go get a Chris Davinsky and roll with him. Alex Wood was a guy I drafted as a reliever this year because I saw they were going to move him to the bullpen, and all of a sudden he's blossomed into this crazy good starter. But like, I like those middle relievers who, you know, like the Brandon Morrow types, Brock Stewart. Those are guys I'm going and getting. I don't really care about speculating on saves because at the end of the day, like, we don't know who a manager is going to trust. And I just think if you're trying to predict that in advance, I think that's kind of fool's gold. Like, you're being – I don't know if we have too much ability to forecast that kind of stuff. At least that's what I think.
Yeah. Well, they've got four hitters in their top 10. J.D. Martinez, Zach Cozart, Yonder Alonso, and Jed Lowry.
Okay, the Oakland guys I don't think are getting traded. I mean, Alonso wants an extension. I mean, he wants it with Oakland is what I mean. And
yeah.
Jed Lowry, I mean, nice player, but what are they going to get for him? You know what I mean? Who's giving you anything for Jed Lowry at his age with his injury history? I mean, you're probably getting like a lower level prospect.
Does the idea of JD Martinez in a new lineup make you excited?
Oh, I love it. Okay. I think number one, I think he's going to the NL West. One of those teams. Yeah. Here's the thing. He should, if Boston were smart, this is the guy they'd go get, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
The Yankees have more capital, but they don't have a spot necessarily, I don't think. Like, are you going to play him in, you can't play him in right with Judge. You can't move Judge. Maybe you DH him in New York. I mean, that'd be insane. That would be so much fun. I think he's going to either the Yankees, the Red Sox, or a team in the NL West would be my guess. And if he goes to the Dodgers, because you can move Puig to left, you can play Chris Taylor anywhere. If he's playing right in Dodger Stadium, in that lineup batting fourth or fifth, if he's batting fifth behind Turner and Bellinger, he could have an insane 2 months. So J.D. Martinez is going to make – like Jeff – I think Jeff Passan was on the Ringer MLB show this week with Ben and Mike Bauman. And he said J.D. Martinez is probably going to get $150 million this offseason. So why not get him to L.A. faster? Like if you – I know I'm rambling here, but if you offered like Alex Verdugo and I don't know if they trade Walker Buehler. I really don't think they would. Brock Stewart, Willie Calhoun, you know, Verdugo, Stewart, and Calhoun. I think that gets it done, right? Are we in the ballpark?
I think so. You're in the ballpark.
Yeah. I'd love to see him in LA. I think he'd be a great, great fit for that lineup. And plus, it allows you to move Puig and get Taylor more into a utility role than your everyday left fielder, which he's been really good at. But I don't know if you necessarily in a playoff series want Chris Taylor in left field. I don't know if that's great. Like, I'd rather have Puig, and then you have the ability to mid-game bring Taylor off the bench. You know, take JD out for defensive purposes, and then you can shuffle things around a little more effectively. Bellinger's versatility is big for them too. So
oh yeah,
I don't know. That's my take. I love.
And then, within that list, in the top 10, two starters: Sonny Gray or Jose Quintana. Either of those you're eyeballing?
I think like Gray's been linked to the Astros a lot. I think that was another Jeff Passan thing. I'm regurgitating a lot of his content because he's way more connected than I am. It's a great pot. You should go listen to his appearance on the Ringers MLB show. No, I think Gray's definitely getting traded. I can't see somewhere like Boston giving up a lot for him because they just don't have a lot. Like, they're not giving up Rafael Devers. It's just not happening. I think the Astros would be a likely spot for him because now they lost Paulino. I don't think they want Martez starting. You can't push Keuchel and McCullers. Sonny Gray makes sense for them. I think the asking price for Quintana is going to be too high. Plus, he's kind of sucked. I mean, Quintana has not been great. He just hasn't been good.
Yeah.
I've for years I was saying, well, he didn't get a lot of respect because he didn't win a lot of games, but he was still pitching well. So this year it's kind of been the opposite, right? He's pitched poorly, but he's still kind of gotten bailed out a bit. So I don't know.
The walks are up, ERA is high. Owners have definitely not gotten what they bargained for when they were picking him up this season.
No, but those are the guys you get burned on, the guys outside that very top elite tier of starters that you go over for. The winner's curse, right? You pay the most and you get the least production wise. So those are tough guys. Were there any other trade guys? That's a good question, by the way. Good question. Way to go.
So that was my topic. There's your trades to watch.
All right. Was that your fourth?
That was four.
All right. Let me pull up my list again here. You haven't stolen any of mine yet, which I can't tell if it's a good thing or a bad thing. No, wait, you did. You stole one. It was JD Martinez trade potential. That was one of mine.
Because
I was going to say, oh, I didn't mention, if he goes to the Diamondbacks or the Rockies, how crazy would that be?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, JD and Coors. That would be wild.
I would take that, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm excited thinking about it. Let's see. Oh, the Jimmy Nelson post-hype breakout is really blowing my mind because I was kind of all over this a month. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I'm gonna. I was kind of all over this like a month or two ago, and he's just gone out and continued to pitch well. I've been really impressed as my player page redirects. Nicely done. Let me pull up his BP numbers because I want his DRA. I don't have it in front of me. Jimmy Nelson. Are there a lot of Jimmy Nelsons in baseball? No, there's one. Okay, so he's 28 years old. I don't know if you knew this last year, but he gave up the most hits of any pitcher in baseball, I think.
Huh, I did not.
And he had one of the highest walk rates of any pitcher in the game, any starter. Over four walks per nine. He gave up over a hit per inning, so he gave up 186 hits last year. Which is a lot. But this year, he's been unbelievable. He has a 3.20 ERA. His DRA is 3.24, which is, you know, that's what you're going to get in Miller. You're going to give up some home runs. What he's done is he's thrown a lot more strikes. You know what I mean? Like, he's in the zone a lot more. He's kept the ground ball rate intact. He's at 51%. The strikeout rate is bumped up. He's at 10 strikeouts per nine now. He's never been over 7.5. And his walk rate's down to 2.2 per nine. He's never been below 3.5 in the last 2 years. So, look, he's been really good. He's still going to give up some home runs, but he has 112 strikeouts and only 25 walks in 104 innings. What more do you want to see? That's kind of what I say when you look at guys' numbers who are this good. Like, what more evidence do you want? He's doing all the things you look for in a breakout type of pitcher.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, as you look at it, I mean, nothing really jumps out as here's the obvious fluky reason he's having success this season. Right. Like you mentioned, you know, he's in the zone a lot more. But other than that, there's nothing.
His BABIP is 332.
Yeah, yeah.
He's doing this. Like, okay. I love Jimmy Nelson. If you can go trade for, I mean, where would you rank him in a dynasty league? I'm trying to think now. I like Nelson a lot. I'm tired of talking about him almost because I've written about him, I've done podcasts about him, but like no one seems to care. Like, and he doesn't get a ton of respect. I have this running debate with Ryan Bloomfield, friend of the pod, where he says Masahiro Tanaka is better than Jimmy Nelson, and Tanaka outpitches him every week. I mean, Nelson outpitches Tanaka every week. So I don't know. Just saying.
It's a good debate.
Trade for Jimmy Nelson. Do it.
Mm.
All right. What was your last one?
Well, I'm going to go back to I'm between two. All right, we'll do this one. We'll make it more of a team thing. Let's take the Chicago Cubs struggles this season.
Oof.
Heading into the second half, are you selling your Cubs if at all possible?
We get a ton of bat signal questions about Addison Russell, by the way. Like, we get a ton. There's a lot. Craig Goldstein, I think he tweeted that he's answered 2,000 bat signals now. I was like, I just want to, like, go back and figure out how much time he's wasted on them, you know, over the years.
Yeah, those numbers are not good. No. So, no.
Sub replacement level production there, Craig.
Yeah, but he struggled. Zobrist has struggled. I mean, it's tough to say Rizzo's struggling, but I mean, other than Bryant, is it safe to say
Bryant's
they've all kind of disappointed?
Well, how much of that is you can only push yourself for so long at an elite level, right?
Right.
Like, it's not the, you know, I think that the hangover effect is kind of a cliche. That's not, I don't think there's a lot of truth to that, but I think the mileage does sort of wear on you after a while. You're playing so many more games than your competition that it just gets difficult at times. And we've seen it before with other teams and in other sports, right? That's what makes LeBron so incredible, right? Is that mm-hmm. he's pushed himself at this level for so long that no one's ever really done that. So look, I think the Cubs are going to be fine, but like, they're still going to make the playoffs. Like, what do you do here? Like, you can't trade Chris Bryant. you just can't do it. You're never going to get back enough to justify it. So, like, I
think every Brewers fan listening to the pod just punch their radio.
Well, like, the Brewers are fascinating because, right? Like, they're probably not going to make the playoffs.
They do have Jimmy Nelson.
They do. I mean, if they were going to, he'd be their ace, and I'd give them a shot in a wild card. Maybe that's a fascinating debate. Like, if to tie back into Jimmy Nelson, I mean, if the Brewers make the playoffs and he wins a wild card game, who would they play in a wild card game? It'd probably be an NL West team. So let's say they go into Coors, right?
Oh my gosh!
For this game, and Jimmy Nelson wins it. He throws 8 shutout innings. He strikes out 13. Like, what do you think people are going to pay for him in drafts next year? Like, he's going to be a top 20 starter. Like, people are going to go nuts. Oh, yeah. All right. I'm done fantasizing about Jimmy Nelson. Jimmy! So
if you have one of those Cubs stars on your roster, are you trying to trade him for the second half on your fantasy roster?
I'm trying to trade Rizzo because I think you can sell the, hey, he's going to get second base eligibility. So if you have a good second baseman already, I think you can parlay that into more of a return for a team that needs a second baseman. In a redraft, I'd try and sell. But like, it really depends where you are. Everything's context specific. So, I mean, I'd explore it. Like, why not? It can't hurt.
Yeah.
I'd try it. All right. Anything else for you here? Because my last one's fun. We were talking about this off the air.
I'm good. Do it.
Okay. So my last one here is Dellin Betances, all right?
Mm.
We're recording this on, let's see, it's Wednesday night.
The 5th.
Yeah, July 5th, okay? You know the answer to this, but for the listeners, let's go through this exercise. What do you think his strikeout rate is right now? What do you think it is? I mean, you know Eric, right? Do you know?
I'm looking at it, so I kind of cheated.
All right, what is it? Read it.
On the site I am looking at, it is currently 42.4%.
That translates to 16.79 strikeouts per 9 for Dellin Betances.
That's good.
That is historic. That isn't just good. That is historic. Okay? What do you think his walk rate is, everyone listening? Mind you, keep in mind, he faced five batters today. He walked four of them and blew
what it. Whatever you think it is, it's higher than that.
It is much higher. It is 8.56 walks per nine. Eight! That is Carlos Marmol on steroids. It is nuts. So, to do this exercise, we decided to figure out. Well, okay. Basically, Dylan Betances is a three true outcomes pitcher at this point, right? He's either giving up a home run, he's striking you out, or he's walking you. He's Kyle Barraclough on steroids, which I didn't know was possible, but that's the cliche I'm stumbling on. Carlos Marmol, Kyle Barraclough on steroids. The lack of command is startling. So I am on the Baseball Reference Play Index right now, and I've plugged in the following numbers. In baseball history, strikeouts per nine over 12, walks per nine over 6. Mind you, Betances is on an island by himself, okay? He's at 17 and 9 pretty much. Let's see the results. I have not clicked get results yet. Here we go. Let's see what comes up. Wow, okay. There are six players since 1960 who have posted a strikeout rate over 12 and a walk rate over 6. Can you name any of them?
Oh, geez. Would early Randy Johnson be on that list?
Relief pitchers. Relief pitchers only.
Oh, just relievers. Just relievers. Relievers.
One of them is still in baseball, and he's really, really good.
Oh, my. And
you might have watched this. You may have witnessed this happen. I'm dropping a lot of hints here for you. The year was 2011.
Is it Aroldis?
It was.
Okay.
He struck out 12.78 per nine and walked 7.3 in 50 innings at age 23. Unbelievable. Wow.
I have no clue on the other five.
Okay. The other one, like I mentioned, I told you, Carlos Marmol, 2010. 16 strikeouts per nine, 6 walks per nine. The other four, Jeff Nelson in 2001 with Seattle, John effing Rocker in 2000. Oh my God. In 53 innings, he struck out 13. He walked eight per nine.
Oh gosh.
I didn't know that was possible. Oh my God. He got 24 saves that year. The other two, Matt Manti in 1999 and someone named Brian Harvey with the California Angels in 1989. This is just blowing my mind. I mean, Betances is higher than all of them by a lot in both categories.
Yeah, I have no explanation for this. For some reason, his swing rate on pitches outside of the zone has kind of bottomed out this year. It's hovered around 30%. It's down to 24, basically. So for whatever reason, hitters are not biting like they used to on his pitches out of the zone for some reason. Yeah, so what does this do for you with his fantasy value moving forward? Obviously, with Chapman there, the saves are going to be an issue. The strikeouts are always great, but how much do the walks turn you off to him moving forward?
I don't think you can use him, can you? Like, when he's walking over eight guys per nine, like in a head to head, like I just don't think you can use him anymore. In a roto, maybe you can survive it, but that's gonna really hurt your whip. Man, this is bad. Like this is really not good. We saw this start in the second half. Okay, right. Betances had a walk rate over 5 in the second half last year, and we kind of wrote it off, and we said, all right, it's something to watch, but he's still Dylan Betances. He was still effective. He's gone to another level this year. And like I remember talking with Tyler Glass now, and when you have guys who are that big, I mean, if your mechanics get screwed up, it's always like a constant battle for guys who are that big to keep everything together. But if your mechanics are off or something's wrong in that department – it might take him a while to figure it back out. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't just get fixed overnight. This is not a quick fix, I don't think. I'd be really scared if I owned Dylan Betances. I'd be.
We need to get Stacy back on the phone for more Yankees talk.
But that's the thing. Like he just doesn't have a ton of value because he's not getting saves. But like, I think Dellin Betances got drafted very aggressively this year in all the leagues I played in. So.
Oh yeah, I know. I was putting him up there with kind of Andrew Miller and those that stud level of not a closer, but are going to get you strikeouts and ERA. And yeah, it's definitely been a disappointing season from that perspective from him.
The volatility of prospects and relief pitchers—that is the theme of today's show, folks. All right, Eric, we're going to take a quick break, then we'll come back, wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 140 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank my co-host, Eric Roseberry, filling in for Mike and Brett. Eric, hey man, I always have a great time when you come on this show. Thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I super enjoyed it. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of the pod when I get to listen to it. So it's a pleasure to get to contribute.
You can find both of our work at baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe today, the 1-year premium membership. If you sign up for the super premium membership, you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. We both answer questions on it. It's a lot of fun. You can basically get a second opinion on anything fantasy related or life advice. I mean, if you really feel like you need an outlet, we're there for you. Whatever you want, use the Bat Signal. You can follow us on Twitter. Eric is at Eric Roseberry. I am at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, or Stitcher Radio app, wherever you get your podcasts from. We did get a new review on iTunes. We did get two reviews actually this week, and they were both positive. So I'll tell you what, I think I'm gonna read them because I said I would, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is from N Longfield. He gave it 5 stars. His best fantasy podcast. I like where this is going. Do you like fantasy baseball? Do you like winning fantasy baseball? # Larry Schechter. Then you should listen to this podcast. Mike, Brett, and George know their stuff and have a great repertoire. I think that's how you say that. Right? Repertoire?
Sure. Okay.
I think you meant rapport, but...
I was going to say it, yeah. But still, it's nice.
Very nicely done. I like it. Good content that is very well presented and fun to listen to. That was this week. The next one is from D-Red Phil Sox. Very nice. Very informative. I love the podcast. Great analysis and fun personalities. Well, Eric, you're a fun personality, and this was good. So, for Eric Roseberry, this is George Bissell saying thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Oh, I also have to thank Jeff Paternostro for coming on. He's fantastic, folks. Go follow him. Read his stuff. The BP Top 50 midseason list is up right now, so make sure you go check that out. So all of us here, I want to say thank you for listening. I hope you had a safe and happy 4th of July. And until our next show, we'll be back with Brett and Mike next week. So long, everybody.